Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Uvoli. The Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast is about talking to people who have dedicated their life to the game of lacrosse and learning about who they are, how they got to where they are today, and what they do to improve themselves and their teams. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at GC Sports, and if you're a coach or a parent, check out Game Changer Team Manager in the App Store. You can ditch the emails and spreadsheets. The free Game Changer Team Manager app streamlines communication, scheduling, and live scoring into one easy-to-use app. Game Changer Team Manager is 100% free for your entire team. Learn more at gc.com/teammanager or search for Game Changer Team Manager in the App Store. Today in the show, we have Stephen Brooks. Steve is a graduate of Syracuse University, where he won two national championships, one as a freshman and another to round out his career as a senior. His senior year, he was also a first-team All-American and the McLaughlin Award winner for the nation's top midfielder. Steve was drafted 6th overall by the Chicago Machine. He's an MLL All-Star who now plays for the Florida Launch, where he's a team co-captain. Steve and I were roommates during my time at Syracuse, so it was really great catching up with him. His passion for the game comes through in the interview. I think everybody's going to hear that. We got a chance to talk about things like how he made it to Syracuse lacrosse while playing in a non-traditional hotbed area of Illinois, how he came back from injuries, how Syracuse was able to turn everything around after missing the playoffs in 2007 to winning the national championship his senior year in 2008, and much more. Here's my interview with Steve Brooks. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to catch up. But let's get started like I always do. How'd you get started playing lacrosse?
Well, first and foremost, I got to thank my brother, Robert, who is my second oldest brother. He's the one that got me involved. He came home one day with a lacrosse stick, and knowing me being a little pipsqueak of a little kid slash punk that I was, he immediately walked in with a lacrosse stick, and the second he put it down, I started picking it up and swinging around my entire house. And I was running around just trying to pretend like I knew what I was doing, and I probably broke a bunch of stuff or knocked a bunch of stuff over. And immediately, within the next 5 minutes, I got yelled at to put the stick down or go outside and play. And that's when, literally, my first time I ever picked up a stick. And then my brother taught me how to pass and catch. And it's rest is history from there. And then I just was able to try to get involved with as many clubs as I can.
So,
camps and clinics.
How old were you when this happened?
I would say I was in fourth grade, probably. Yeah. But when I was growing up, there was no really leagues or anything of that nature. I mean, lacrosse right. was just a brand new sport in Illinois. And the only time I can ever get involved in something was if my town were to do a camp or if I knew somebody that knew of a lacrosse camp going around the area, I'll have to go out there.
Gotcha. So what was the first time, when was the first time that you played organized lacrosse?
I would probably say the first organizational lacrosse in some type of league was in sixth or seventh grade, where we had just indoor lacrosse.
Right.
And I was lucky enough to have the high school that I was going to at that time, he was my brother's coach, and he was the one that basically started all of lacrosse in Illinois. His name was Rich Martin. He started Lacrosse America, and he was the front runner to help grow the sport of lacrosse.
Wow.
And thankfully, I was just always in my brother's back pocket going wherever he went to watch him practice or watch him go to some type of league. And finally, they were able to start something around sixth grade, I think it was, where I actually played indoor lacrosse.
Right. Wow. So your first experience with lacrosse was indoor lacrosse.
Was indoor lacrosse. But again, let me just rephrase this. Indoor lacrosse in Illinois was indoor soccer field with 6x6 lacrosse goals.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So it was outdoor lacrosse inside, basically.
Yeah, basically. Right. So you're shooting from your opposite defensive goal and scoring goals.
Gotcha. So at what point did lacrosse start becoming the thing that you knew you were going to play at the next level? At what point did you start taking it a little bit more seriously?
I almost want to say right away, right when I picked it up, I was addicted to the game. Mm. I mean, I played baseball and soccer growing up, and I was sick and tired of baseball and how boring it was just to sit in the outfield. My parents would yell at me to start paying attention.
Yeah, baseball does not. Baseball does not seem like your sport.
No, it does not. I need to be active. And my parents actually started seeing like how tired I was after lacrosse and how much energy I was able to get out. So they were eager to keep pushing me towards it. But, you know, right away, it was something different. Hmm. Nobody around my area, none of my friends played lacrosse. And it was just something that I just thought, you know, I'm not an ordinary kid. I know I'm hyperactive. I know I'm loud. I know I'm crazy. And this sport just seems to fit me because it's different. And I always felt as if, not that I'm different, but I always just felt like I went at a different pace than most people.
Right. So as you're a young kid in Illinois, you know, playing outdoor, indoor lacrosse, who are some of the lacrosse players that you looked up to? Who are some of the people that you were sort of, I guess, modeling your game after?
So there was a guy in my town that went to the high school and went on to go to Butler University. His name is Brett Williamson. Mm-hmm. He used to come back when he was in college and work these summer camps in Libertyville. And I used to always go to these summer camps, and he would be always at the camps teaching us. And he was kind of the guy I first started imitating, trying to be like, because he's teaching me how to shoot on the run. He's teaching me how to do all these little things. And I'm just trying to be the biggest sponge.
Right.
From kind of like the world stars. I mean, back then, these kids these days don't realize how hard it is to watch lacrosse. We had VHS, I'm sure you remember.
Right. You watched two games.
ESPN would only do the Final Four games and the championship games. And so that's the only lacrosse. And the closest lacrosse to me was either Notre Dame or going out to Indiana as well and going to Butler. So I would every Memorial Day weekend, I would record all the Final Four games and just watch them. And of course, that's where I became my huge passion for Syracuse, because I always saw Syracuse on the Final Four. They're always either in the championship or winning a championship or losing the championship. Mm. And I was just like, I love their colors. And I was like, that's it.
Right.
Who's on Syracuse lacrosse that I can be like? And it was always Casey Powell. And then it was Ryan Powell.
Yeah.
And then it was Mikey Powell.
So what were the things that you did as, you know, you're looking up to these players to get better, to improve your game so that you can get to the next level?
Well, I mean, I still talk about it to kids these days. I used to watch certain players play. Well, of course, the Pals, and you only got Michael Springer and shooting, and you got a couple other guys. I can't think of the names right now, but when I saw a play happen, mm-hmm. I would rewind it and then watch it again and then rewind it and watch it again over and over and over again and try to remember how that person did it. So then when I go out to my backyard after the games, I would then try to imitate that play.
Right.
And then I'll go back in the field and I'll do it again, or I'll even write down something that I see that I want to try. Mm-hmm. And that was just something how I just had to I literally had to teach myself skills and just try to imitate everything that they were doing and try to bring it to my backyard and then hopefully can bring it to a field.
Right. And then so as you're growing up, you know, in a non-hotbed area, right? You didn't grow up in Long Island or Maryland. What did you do to sort of stand out as a player? How did you get noticed by Syracuse, by the D1 schools?
Well, I had a good friend of mine, probably my best friend, who was a year older, and he and I played lacrosse once, starting in sixth grade. He was in seventh grade. I always played up in seventh grade, and then I always played up. So when I was in eighth grade, I was playing JV indoor lacrosse. I was blessed for my parents to be just really athletic and just really fast, and then just try to teach me the stick skills. So he was kind of the guy that kind of took me under his wing to teach me that. And, you know, he was like the first big guy from our school to go to a major D1 program, which was Denver. And the only reason why I got involved in recruiting was because of him and getting recruited to Denver. But that did not happen at all in high school. I struggled a little bit in high school, unfortunately, after my mom passed away my sophomore year. And I kind of got to a point where I had to make a decision whether I'm going to try to focus on this and try to make an education out of it and get a career out of, you know, something while playing lacrosse, or I can go down a really bad path and try to and fall into a dark area. So I made that, right decision and started following. So out of, after my senior year in high school, I was getting recruited to play soccer and lacrosse at like Wesley College and some other smaller D3 schools until my aunt came up to me and talked to me about Bridgeton Academy. And she's like, "Hey, you're real serious about playing Division I lacrosse." So I was like, "I would love to just give an opportunity to go out east and just showcase myself and just try to see if there's an opportunity." And she's like, "Well, this school's a postgraduate school. It's all boys, 180 kids. And it's just go out there and get your academics together and try to get recruited." And I was like, "I'm in." Without even seeing the school or doing anything, I said, "I'm in. Like, what do I have to do?" And I went there. I went there to focus on soccer. That's what I told Bridgeton, knowing that I wanted to play lacrosse. And soccer was normally my number one sport. So when I went out to Bridgeton, I missed all of fall of recruiting for the fall ball showcases for colleges because I was playing soccer. And then by the springtime came, my coach was like, "Hey, are you going to play lacrosse?" I was like, "Yeah, like I want to play lacrosse. Like, this is what I want to do." And he kind of like busted a little bit. Yeah, and then I'm being called because I was a soccer player and I never played. And then finally I started playing. He's like, "All right, I see your potential." And he started coaching me up more and more. And then he starts talking to me about colleges. I was like, "All right, here we go. This is the ball's rolling." And there's just one common theme I always had when I was getting recruited. He's from Illinois. I don't know if I can risk taking a kid from Illinois on my roster. I don't know how he's going to pan out. And I just kept my head down and just kept plowing through. And, you know, it's watching Syracuse on the Final Fours and championships all my life. It's always been a dream, but I got an opportunity to verbally commit to University of Denver when I was in the spring of my Bridgeton year. So I'm just about to graduate and he comes up to me and goes, "Hey, how do you feel about Syracuse University?" I was like, I kind of laughed in his face. I was like, "Are you kidding? Like, it'd be like a dream come true, but that's not going to happen. I don't have the skill." He's like, "No, I just got off the phone with Desco. He's going to overnight a application and I want you to fill it out." I was like, "Wait, what?" He's like, "Yeah, you're going to do this." I was like, "I have two papers to write and a final to study for." He's like, "I don't care. Find something." And lo and behold, I did it. I was verbally committed to go to Denver. And next thing you know, a month before school starts, I get a call from Desco. My dad gets a call from Desco congratulating my dad and saying I got accepted. My dad came home. I'm sitting on the couch watching TV and he just taps me on the shoulder and says, "Desco called. Congratulations. You got accepted to Syracuse. How do you feel?" I was like, I popped up and I gave him the biggest hug. I was like, "This is awesome. This is like a dream come true." He's like, "So do you want to go?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, you got to tell Denver." I was like, "Yeah, I know."
So I want to understand, you said a month before school. So this is what, the end of July, early August?
This is like the beginning towards like early part of July. I'll say a month and a half to be exact almost.
Wow. So that late. And when did that conversation about Desco happen?
So that happened in the spring and then we just kept in the loop about the clearinghouse and my grades and everything like that. And then I was able to play in a couple of tournaments that they saw. And then they finally said, "You know what? Let's go. Let's make this happen." And the funny thing is I was recruited in the fall to go talk to Syracuse about playing soccer there. And I told my soccer coach at that time, I go, "Coach, the only reason I'm ever going to go to Syracuse is to play lacrosse." He goes, "Do you think that's going to happen?" I was like, "Probably not, but I would only go to Syracuse to play lacrosse." He goes, "Well, this is your opportunity to go." I was like, "No, I'm not thinking anything of it."
Wow. So you made the decision to go to Syracuse. What was that first semester like? Did you feel like it was a fit right away?
I was kind of a lost puppy in a big world when I first got there. I mean, like, my roommate was from Henniger, which is a town, is the city of Syracuse.
Right.
And he knew everybody. I mean, all these kids grew up playing with sticks in their hands and being coached by great coaches and having all these amazing skills. And I'm just this kid from Illinois with 19 high school teams. That's all I had. Mm-hmm. And just trying to just get by. And I'll honestly never forget my first fall ball practice. We first, of course, everybody knows the tradition at Syracuse is we play a run and gun. So the first drill, we do stick work, and then we go right to full field fast breaks. Mm-hmm. I come down, Jay Piper throws me a beautiful pass over my right shoulder. I put my stick in my right hand, and I'm coming down on a fast break, and Mikey Powell is at point. Brian Knee is bottom left, and I think it was Brian Crockett was bottom right. And these are like studs that I watched in college across on TV before I even got there.
Right.
And all I'm thinking about is, please give Mikey a good pass. Please give Mikey a good pass. Please give Mikey a good pass with my offhand. I give him a pass, and lo and behold, it's perfectly right to the stick. I go, yes! Thinking that the play's over, he catches it, throws it behind the back. Well, he didn't throw it. He faked it. I look down thinking he threw it, and by the time I look back to Mikey, the ball comes back and hits me square in the face mask. I literally, no joke, Joe, I get laughed off the field about, oh my God, you didn't even play lacrosse in Illinois. What are you doing out here, kid? Get off the field. And I go to the back of the line, and I kind of hang my head. I was like, wow.
Right.
This is serious. Oh my God. I have got my... I've got my work cut out for me.
Yeah.
And then up comes Ryan Powell. Comes up to me and goes, hey, bud, just shake it off. Who cares, man? Just a game of lacrosse. Everybody makes mistakes. Let's just try to figure out, let's just make the right play. Just keep your eye on the ball. And I was just like, oh, my God, you're my idol.
Right.
Oh, my God, I'm playing with your brother. He was my idol growing up. Like, what is going on? And in that time, I kind of, like, settled down. And I was like, all right, I just got to figure out what I need to do.
Right.
I was athletic enough to get on the field. I just got to work on my stick skills, and that's all I was basically doing. Right. Every drill that we did in practice, I would either stay after practice or I would try to find time between classes to go out in the field and go shoot and try to work on a stick work or try to hit the wall every day for the next 5 years because I redshirted. I just wanted to try to improve my skill and get as best as I possibly can.
Right.
But it was a rude awakening.
Right. So what did that look like? Right. So while you're, you know, in between classes, after practice, before practice, what specific things are you working on? How are you picking those things to work on so that you can improve your game, you know, each and every year?
I mean, I've done something that I've tried to do when in college that I did when I was young. I used to write notes, as many notes as I can down, like 3 to 5 things after every time I came across somebody that was knowledgeable about the game or somebody that taught me a skill. I would get home and write it down on a post-it note or write it down somewhere where if I ever went out to the backyard, I would take one of these notes and I'll put it out next to the outside and I can read something and I go try to do it. So when I got to Syracuse, I kind of tried to carry that with me. So if I saw somebody doing something in practice that I wasn't really good at, I would try to go make myself better at that one skill. And even if it was, usually it was tough because in between classes, because I have to wake up and then I'll go to class. And then right after I get done with classes, I got to go right to the field house, get ready for practice. After practice, I go right to study table after study table. I'm getting home, it's like 9, 10 o'clock, and then I got to go do the same thing the next day. Once, like, fall ball kind of ended, I was able to settle back down and get into a schedule where I can just walk to the field. I mean, we lived on South Campus, which was walking distance to Manly Fieldhouse, and we had access to all the balls and all the goals whenever we wanted. So I would just grab a couple buddies of mine on the team and say, okay, let's go shoot. Hey, let's go do this. Hey, let's go do that. And I started just getting myself acclimated with how they were doing it, and they would teach me some things here and there. But I just, whenever I had free time, I would go. By the time I graduated, I was always probably the first one on the field, and I was either the last one on the field because I just wanted to get there and be a lax rat and just go shoot and just go work on something and just try to work on my skills as much as I possibly can.
Right. Makes sense. So I want to talk about, you know, unfortunately, you and I never really got to play that much while I was at Syracuse. You had that. It was a knee injury, right, in 2006?
Yeah, tore my ACL.
So can you talk about how did you manage to come back after that injury? What was your focus? How did you approach, okay, so I'm out 2006. What do I got to do to get back on the field by 2007?
I mean, I've had this drive. My dad tells me, my mom used to tell him, she used to tell him, is like, he's got a competitive edge. He just hates to lose. And he just wants, you could tell, like, he's passionate about it. My mom was my biggest fan. So you can imagine at such a young age, when you lose your mother before you even, like, turn 16, you're just like, you're in shambles. Yeah. And so at that point in my career, when I tore my ACL, yes, I hit rock bottom. I was like, this sucks. This is a bad injury. They say it's one of the worst injuries. All I thought about was, I've been through way worse than this. There's nothing that can keep me down. And all I had is in the back of my head is my mom's image of her saying, come on, you can do this. Let's go. Do it. Get better. It's just a grind. It's just another speed bump. Well, how are you going to get over it? You're just going to drive over it and continue. Right. And that's all I did. And I talked to my trainer when that happened, and he gave me, as you know, Troy, he gave me a picture of the exact moment that I had when I tore my ACL. It's a perfect picture where you can see my knee inwards a little bit, and I hung it up in my locker. So every time I hung it, I looked, opened my locker, I would see that picture, and I was like, I got to get back to work. And I just had that kind of drive to say, all right, what do I need to do? And Troy would be like, you got to come in every day. I'm like, can I come in twice a day? He's like, yeah, if it works, I will. I'll come. I'll do training before or after practice, or even during practice. I don't need to be out there. I need to get back on this field. And that was just my mentality. Let's just keep chipping away, chipping away. And all I did was circle that first game of the next year to get back to where I needed to go. And that day was one of the greatest days of my life.
That's awesome. No, that's awesome. So I want to talk about, you know, something sort of similar, right? So you know, you get back, you have an injury 2006, you get back 2007. 2007 is a tough year for, you know, Syracuse lacrosse in general. You guys don't make the playoffs that year, but next year, 2008, you guys come back and you win the national championship. Can you talk about what contributed to that turnaround? How were you guys able to make such a big change?
Well, let's go back to my sophomore year where we broke the 22 consecutive year streak to the Final Four. So you can only imagine what alumni and the entire university is thinking when they break that huge streak. So when that happened, everybody was just like, oh my God, this is terrible. This stinks. I'm like, how do we get back? And it was kind of leading up to my sophomore year, to the junior year that we had, you know, when you guys went to the Final Four and you guys did so well. It's just more of, how do we come together like a family? And so in 2007, when we didn't make the playoffs for the first time in 30 years, we were just like, our class was just like, uh-oh, nope, not going to happen again. What do we got to do? Right. And there's a point in that year, because I was upset too, because I just had back surgery that following summer. So I missed, I missed 2007 fall. And then 2007, I played with a herniated disc that turned out to be a bulge disc, and I could barely walk. So it was like, I just had to deal with injury after injury, and it stunk. And I sat down and told myself, what do I need to do to make sure that this does not happen again? And next thing you know, we start making calls. Mikey Lavelle, Evan Brady the team captains, they start coming, getting people together. Then Dan Hardy and the younger guys, we start talking about, you know, what is something that we can bring in to the fall season or even the spring season that can help turn our season around. And everybody basically says it's never going to happen again. It's either you show up in practice and you do your job and you grind it out, or get off the field because we don't want anything to do with you. And the way it worked is that if our upperclassmen were to show you how it was supposed to be done, then you should try to follow in those footsteps. Because if you don't want to follow that way, then get off our bus. We don't want you. And that's when "Our Day Will Come" came up as a quote, by saying, you know, our day is going to come. We're going to get that day. And our day was focused on Memorial Day. Our day will come. We're going to get back there. When we do, we're going to let the world know that we're back on top. And we just went to practice every day, just working. No matter what, rain or shine, we would be battling each other. We'll be pushing each other. Right. I mean, obviously, you know, and there's fights that break out, but it's like, you want to go to a field and go to practice and compete. And Donnie used to say it all the time. You practice like you play and you play like you practice. And let me tell you something.
Right.
We practiced like we played in 07 and we made sure that that was never going to happen again. And we're going to go hard every day we possibly can. And
right.
That class reminded my, in 08 reminded me exactly like my freshman year. The seniors and juniors took us all freshmen under their wings and made us feel as if we're part of the family from the first day. And that's the one thing that I think that we try to do and is instill in that class, that freshman year, is, hey, come with us. You don't have to do anything stupid. You don't have to do any type of hazing. I want you to feel as special as we do. I want you to feel comfortable. If you're going to go out there and you're going to be a freshman, you're going to play. I don't want you to think that an upperclassman is going to beat you up because you're taking a spot. We want to put the best guys out there, and we want to make you feel comfortable to be at your best. And we were a very, very close group. I mean, that, after I graduated, they went to go win it in 09. And that was still majority of the core group of guys. And so it was truly amazing to watch that flourish into something special. And then as you're going through the season, you're just thinking to yourself, holy cow, like, we got something special going on. Let's keep this going. And no matter what happened, if there was any type of hiccup or something that tried to hold us down, we would immediately sweep it under the rug and just keep our eyes forward in what our task in hand needed to be.
So it sounds like a lot of the focus was about senior upper class leadership, sort of setting the tone for everyone else. But you guys were also very cognizant of making sure that the team felt like one single unit, that the team was working together towards an ultimate goal.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Our philosophy was hold the rope, because if one person lets go of the rope, then everybody else has more pressure to hold on to. So your job was to hold the rope as a team. So Hal Luther used to say to us, our strength coach, is hold the rope. Now he's a strength coach for the Buffalo Bills, I believe. But that's what he used to say, hold the rope, be accountable, do your job, and everybody else will do theirs, and everything will take care of itself.
Right. So I wonder, this might be hard, but can you talk about what were some of those conversations about when, you know, after the 2007 season, you know, the seniors are calling each other and you guys are talking about, okay, this is never going to happen again. What are we going to do to make, you know, to make next year, to make 2007 never happen again? What were some of those conversations like? What were you guys talking about? How were you guys approaching it?
The biggest thing that we had to control is off the field issues. We had, like, throughout the 5 years I was there, we had some off field issues that kind of, you know, put a little damper on the team, because some kids will either get kicked out of school or some people will get in trouble and something will happen. And you don't want to see a close friend or a teammate of yours go through that. And so we had a couple distractions. And so going into that, we just didn't want to have any distractions. We wanted to have everybody on the same page and just trust that what we do is going to lead us down the right path. And that was the biggest issue, is just number one is making sure people are doing their jobs by showing up for class and doing their schoolwork and being eligible. Number two is nobody's going to go out and go partying and do something dumb that can jeopardize our season or even jeopardize something that can affect them. And it was just being able to, you know, treat those younger kids like your little brother, that if they were to mess up, you know, you got to smack them around a little bit and just have a talk with them. Like, look, you can't do that. Like, let's be serious. That's unacceptable. And that was the biggest thing. And everywhere we went, it was almost majority of the team would be hanging out. I mean, if we went to a house, everybody will be there. Hey, call these people. All right, everybody will be there. Meet at South Campus. Everybody will be there. For my junior year, it was kind of like we had little pockets of people here and there hanging out, and it wasn't that close. And we wanted to make everybody feel special, and we wanted everybody to get theirs, to be a part of something special. And I guess to answer your question, the biggest picture was just to make sure everybody had a clean slate, everybody did their part, and just nobody, no funny business was going on to potentially veer us off our main path.
Right. And how do you how did you guys hold each other accountable? Right? I mean, you know, 40, 50 people on a team, it's hard to make sure that everybody is sort of toeing the line, for lack of a better way to put that. How did you guys hold each other accountable to go to class, you know, be early to practice, put on the extra work? How'd you guys do that?
Well, majority of everybody had somebody in their class, so they were able to hold that person accountable. And then Leland Rogers came in and started checking. Like, coaches used to never check up on us in class. That was just starting to become a huge issue. Coaches now then started to make sure that we went to class, and then lo and behold, our academic counselors knew every teacher, and they made sure that we would always show up to class. And as a senior, I had my academic counselor, Miss Mack, who was awesome. That turned out to be my roommate's mom, and you know Miss Mack.
She's the best.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
She would tell me, someone like, hey, you got to go talk to so-and-so. He didn't show up for class today. The teacher's really upset. And then we can go talk to the player. Mm-hmm. But it was just mostly just making sure that you could tell if people did something that wasn't right and people knew, or people would tell us and we'll go talk to them. And it's just, we had discipline within ourselves to make sure that everything was running smoothly.
Right. And then what did you do as a leader on that team? How did you approach sort of setting the example? What did you do to make sure that the team was going to get to the next level?
I mean, I was, when we did captains, I thought I could have been a captain. I really thought so. It was a goal I wanted to check off. And Coach Desko pulled me aside and said, hey, look, we decided to go with three captains this year instead of four. You were up there as being a captain, but I think you can have more responsibility being more like a player captain. But coach, whatever you need me to do, I'm going to do it. Being a captain is, yes, something I want, but I want to win with this group. And right. So I was able to be more of that kid, that guy, that kids can come talk to me about something that they're not comfortable talking to a captain, and then I can go talk to them as a captain, to the captains, and discuss it besides them being freaked out. And so I was more that guy that was able to take everybody under my wing and just talk to them and get them to know more on a personal level and figure out what makes them tick and how do I push their buttons. So when they're getting yelled at by a coach or getting yelled at by the captains, I'd say, hey, yo, dude, this guy's going through a really tough time. Let's dial it back a little bit and let's try to make sure that we're focusing on make sure he does the right thing, not we just push him a little bit. So it's more of, I took that responsibility of being like the guy's confidant in talking to me, then I can go talk to the captains and go from there.
Right. Gotcha. Makes sense. So let's, you know, we can talk about that stuff all day, but I want to move on to, your training today, you know, especially in the MLL, you know, you travel to get to the game most weekends or every weekend. How do you work on your game nowadays that you're not, it's not like college, you're not practicing every day. What do you do to put in the work to be ready for game day on Saturday in the MLL?
Man, let me tell you, if I knew what I know now back then, I can be a heck of a different player as I look back on it. I mean,
yeah, man, tell me about
it. The hardest, I think, everybody that comes out of college from playing every day and practicing every day and being with your boys to go and to play, practice Friday night with your team and play Saturday and then fly back out Sunday and then not seeing them for another week, it's a rude awakening, and people start thinking to themselves, well, what do you got to do? And what most people don't realize is that you are responsible for yourself to become the player that you are.
Right.
Nobody else is responsible. You have to show up and do your job, because if you don't, somebody else will. Mm-hmm. And next thing you know, you can find yourself not playing. So I always took a regimen in finding in a trainer that could train me, and I can try to mimic some type of drills that they're doing for me to mimic to lacrosse. And they would give me a drill that can help me do something that will benefit me in lacrosse that I would never have thought of. So my first 2 years, I just kind of just winged it, I would guess, and just tried to figure out what I need to do. Right. And my second, third year, I broke my foot my second year, I want to say, or third year in the league. Mm-hmm. And then I took a year off. And after I took that year off, I was like, I can't, I miss it too much. I gotta get back.
Right.
And that, at that time, when I made it back, I made a commitment in, you know, just trying to follow the schedule that I follow now. And right now I follow a schedule, you know, we play Saturday and then we fly home Sunday. Sunday is usually a wash, which is I'm just sore and I just try to let my body recover.
Right.
Monday, I try to do a lift and I try to flush the legs, whether it get out, like right now, I'll either get on my Peloton or I'll just go in my basement and I built a gym down there and I'll go lift and just try to flush the legs out. Hmm. And then Tuesday, I get to the field and I do some speed and agility and shooting on like local kids that I coached at high school that are coming back from college and I'll do shooting stuff.
Right.
Wednesday I'll meet my trainer. He'll put me through a lot of agility and kind of conditioning workouts.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thursday I'm back at the field doing shooting or footwork. Friday I'm traveling. Saturday I play. Sunday I'm right back to the same schedule.
Hmm.
And then in the off season, what I try to do is I try to go Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I try to train just to get my body acclimated. About 2.5 months before season starts,
mm-hmm.
I'll start doing 3 times a week. And then in the off season, I just try to do some type of activity, whether it be just playing pickup basketball or just playing pickleball in my backyard against somebody or basketball. I mean, I just said that, sorry. Or whatever I can do to keep myself active.
Right.
And then once 3 months before season starts, I get into high gear. And then once kind of you're in season and if you feel like you're in shape, you know, it kind of, you just kind of just flow with it and you just don't need to be lifting as much, as heavy as I would call it. Mm-hmm. Just trying to maintain. I mean, shoot, this is my 10th year in the league. But
wow.
The one thing I would think that made a huge difference is my diet. I mean, I used to just eat whatever I can. I mean, you know how it is when you're young, you can eat whatever you want and
right.
just burn it off. And then you go out there and play. Now when you reach past like 27, 28, whatever you eat, you see on your body.
Right.
So
right.
I just tried to take more of a consideration in my nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
I lost about 10 to 15 pounds from when I used to lay in college, took that weight off my body to just to help the longevity.
Mm-hmm.
I took a more focus in my recovery. I bought a pair of Normatex for my legs and hips. I try to take ice baths throughout the week. I try to do yoga every night before I go to bed in season at my house.
Mm-hmm.
I spend an hour in my Normatex and then I stretch and then I do yoga and then I do some type of core and then I go right to bed.
Hmm.
That's like almost every night I'm trying to do that just to try to maintain my body in the right shape that I'm in.
Right, right. And tell people, you know, for people who don't know, what's the Normatec?
So Normatec is this, it's an epidemic now. Like a lot of professional athletes are doing it and a lot of trainers have them. So what it is, it's like an air compression system to help flush lactic acid and soreness and swelling out of your legs. It's kind of like a game ready, but what it does is it's, the legs will cut off certain areas in your leg of circulation. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it tricks your brain to think that as if, oh my God, I need to force blood to this area. Well, your body can force the blood down. What's hard is forcing the blood up. And that's why varicose veins start is because it's lack of blood flow through the veins of circulating up and down through the body. Mm-hmm. So what it does is when you get sore and whatnot, the blood isn't able to flush it out. So what the Normatec is doing, it's tricking your brain to say, I need to send all the blood to this area. I know that this is not getting a lot of pressure.
Hmm.
So what it does is it sends it down and it releases by the 5 chambers. So naturally, when you're done, it's almost as if you flush a toilet in your legs.
Hmm.
When all the chambers release, you can feel the blood flow out of your legs and you can feel like the swelling almost go down.
Hmm.
And naturally what it does, it just helps keep everything away and everything from stiffening up. I mean, I've had multiple surgeries and it's helped. I can go wake up Sunday morning and walk to my plane and hang out with my son Sunday because I was able to treat my body and recover the right way.
Wow. Wow. That's great. So let's talk about, you know, you mentioned what you do on a day-to-day basis during the season. let's talk about those individual training sessions, and we'll break them down by field and weight room. So let's say when you're going up to the field to shoot around either with players or by yourself, what do those sessions typically look like?
Well, first of all, you gotta stretch and warm up. Mm-hmm. So I just do like a little dynamic that's my trainer at True AP has given me, and it's amazing just to activate your hips, your legs, your calves and your ankles and stretch your arms. Mm-hmm. So I get to the corner of a goal and I kind of picked up routines from players that I've seen in the past and friends of mine that have given me other drills. And before I even get into any major shooting, I'll put like bands around my knees. Mm-hmm. You know, those like little tiny bands you put around your knees or your ankles, and you can work on stretching and like your hip mobility.
Yep, the little rubber bands.
Those around my knees. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll put those around my knees and I'll take maybe 10 shots and I'll be at the 5-5 spot, or I'll be at the 6-6 into an area where I'm close to the goal, and I'm just taking light shots and activating my hips. Hmm. So I'll shoot 10 left, and then I'll pick up another 10 balls, because I usually bring 30 to 40 balls with me when I shoot. Mm-hmm. I'll shoot 10 right, and then I'll move it down to my ankles, and then I'll shoot another 10 left, and I'll shoot another 10 right, get it back out, and I'll do the whole thing on the opposite side of the cage with both hands. So I'm working on my angles of shooting. I try to hit the same spot every time. I'm working on my release, but most importantly, I'm working on my drive and my step. Mm-hmm. So when I get done with those two drills, I just shot the ball at least 80 times, and I'm just still getting through my warm-up.
Right.
I'll go back to the opposite side that I started with no bands and do the same routine on both sides. By that time, I've shot the ball, who knows, almost like 120 times. Mm-hmm. Right, boom. If I shoot the ball 100 times before I get to actually start shooting realistically, I know I've done my part. Mm-hmm. Because usually by the 100th shot, your body can start fatiguing, your muscles can start cramping, or you just start getting a little bit tired. So if I can figure out how to get myself tired, so when I go do the actual live shooting drills, I'm teaching my body how to shoot correctly while being fatigued. Mm-hmm. So then I'll go through the drills and I'll step outside a little bit further and I'll do more outside shooting in all different if I'm by myself, I'll do them all different arcs around the field where I most likely find myself getting the shots off. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go back to the basics again and I'll break it down to shooting on the run. I'll make a quick little move and I'll just work on my three-step shooting. And then I'll do that righty and lefty, and I'll do another maybe 80 shots with my right and left hand combined total, and then I'll speed it up through probably the first 40. I'll do just dynamic, and then the last 40, I'll do really hard, realistic, game-like dodges I'll do in a game so I can try to get the shots off. And by the time I'm done with my shooting session, I try to make sure I have at least 400 shots under my belt to make sure that I'm actually done the job that I'm doing.
Right, yeah.
But if I can get guys out in the field, it's really nice because then you can work on your dodging and throwbacks and your dodging and feeding, and then you can work on actually receiving passes from a player that kind of can best replicate a game and try to shoot. And then we try to shoot on goalies. But majority, that's how my schedule is. I'm trying to get 400 shots when I'm out in the field. I'm trying to get a huge sweat going, and I'm trying to tire myself out as much as I possibly can. And the biggest thing I try to do is try to make it the most game-like replicated situation that I can have to go shoot.
Right.
So I got to replicate something that I'm trying to do in a game. So I'll visually see it and I'll go try to do it.
And how long does this whole session take, would you say?
I probably shoot. Well, now I bring my son with me and he tries to do every rep with me. So it's kind
it
of
takes
fun.
A little longer.
But it takes a little longer, but usually it takes me I'll spend an hour and a half to 2 hours on the field.
Gotcha. And you normally do this, you said, 3 times a week?
I do this Tuesday, Thursday.
Gotcha.
I have a goal in my backyard, and I'll try to go shoot whenever I can. If I'm outside with my son, I'll just pick up a ball and I'll start shooting.
Right, okay.
And I'll shoot here and there, but Tuesdays and Thursdays are devoted to getting out in the field and getting my reps in.
Gotcha.
So I'm trying to shoot the ball 800 to 1,000 times by the weekend.
Gotcha. And so let's move on to the weight room. What does your what's a typical routine for you in the weight room look like?
Well, I kind of try to follow something that I did at Syracuse. Mm-hmm. I our trainer, as you know, like I said before, Troy, yep. He gave me a lot. I couldn't, with my back surgery, with two knee surgeries, well, technically three knee surgeries on the same knee, a broken foot, a hernia, all on the left side. I had to take a more toll on my legs and responsibility of not crushing weight. So I'll do my upper body somewhat heavy, but not too heavy to where I'm like, I don't need a good jack. I just need to maintain strength and maintain my flexibility for my upper body. But for my lower body, what's most important to me is doing a lot of body weight stuff and single leg explosion. So I do a lot of TRX workouts and a lot of band workouts just to help my hip mobility, my glutes, my quads, my hammies, and my calves. And I try to do my leg workouts in my basement shoeless. So I work on my ankle stability, and I'm not doing heavy weights. I'm doing maintaining. I'm not going over my body weight for anything. So like if I'm doing hang cleans, I'm probably doing hang cleans at like 120 to 135 pounds. Yes, I know that seems light and people are probably laughing, but I don't need to get jacked. Right. I need to maintain strength and power and quickness, and how fast I can get that bar up is important to me. And then focusing on the single leg structure of a single leg squat or like a split squat or jumping and stuff like that, I need to focus on making sure I'm doing it right. So therefore I can be as powerful as I can with my body in a game like situation. So I usually probably spend an hour in a workout.
Okay.
And I'll just try to rattle through. If I do arms, I'll do legs, and then I'll do an arm workout. Then I'll do a leg workout. Then I'll do an arm leg workout and I'll do a leg workout. And then at the end, I always try to crush core, try to do at least 100 sit-ups.
Okay.
Or at least 5 minutes of doing something with
right,
the core.
Right. And so it sounds like when you're doing lower body, it sounds like what you're focusing on above everything is just your functional movement. Like, how do I make sure that the movement that I'm about to do, I do it as well as I possibly can? Are you ever thinking about increasing weight at all? Or is it all just like, here's the weight that I want to maintain so I can maintain strength, and my focus is making sure that my form is correct, my form is perfect?
I'm making sure my form is perfect or at least somewhat correct, and the only weight I'll ever add is dumbbells. So like if I do side lunges or forward lunges, I'll have dumbbells in my hand just to work on a little bit more of power and explosion, because if it's a single leg and I got dumbbells in my hand, I'm adding more pressure as I would to add it to my back. So instead of taking the weight off my back and put it in my hands, I can focus a little bit more on that explosion with extra weight. So when I get in a position to where my body needs to handle a lot of stress and a lot of weight to it, I'm putting myself in that position and adding that weight to make it some kind of replicate that type of force to my leg.
Gotcha. And
so nothing too seriously heavy.
Gotcha. And where does the cardio come into this? I mean, how much are you running during a week? Is all your cardio coming from playing basketball or some other sports, or where does that fit in?
So, well, in season, I usually get on the Peloton and I'll ride maybe 6 to 10 miles on the Peloton. If anybody's ever done the Peloton or Soul Cycle or spin class, that's equivalent to what it does. And so it's like 20 to 40 minutes I spend on that on Mondays, and I get a really good sweat. It's like it's an awesome workout to flush the legs. I love riding a bike. And then Tuesday I'm on the field doing speed and agility. And while I'm trying to work on my shooting, while I'm shooting, I'm doing footwork drills, and then I'll come out of the footwork drill and take a shot. And so I'm trying to get that in. That's a little bit of conditioning. And then Wednesday, my trainer usually crushes me in doing some type of ladder hurdles, resistance sprints.
Gotcha.
Anything you can do just to try to replicate quick motion, quick movement, quick drives, and the quick sessions. So it's like I get done with a drill, I get 30 seconds off, I get back on. So that's like majority of my conditioning. And then Thursday, I'll do the same thing I do Tuesday, but just at a lighter pace because I got to fly out Friday. I'm just coasting. When I'm off season, getting into preseason, I'm trying to Monday, I'm doing a decent running. Wednesday, I'm crushing myself. Friday, I'm trying to beat myself up as much as I possibly can to get acclimated to that kind of like that practice feel of traveling and getting ready. And then Tuesday, Thursdays are just like a light lift day. And I try to do that for the 2.5 months later.
Gotcha.
So like when I'm shooting, it's not just casually going out there. It's going out there and getting a good sweat in and actually working out hard.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, how you prepare for upcoming opponents or what your pregame routine is like. So you got a game on Saturday. How are you preparing for, you know, your upcoming opponent? What are you looking at?
Well, our coach, Coach Mariano, does a great job in sending us scout and film, usually broken down film every Tuesday. So we get a scout every Tuesday. I read the scout throughout the week, just little blurbs here and there. So I'm not cramming it all in my head at once. I'm just trying to read it bit by bit. And then usually every night from Tuesday on, I'm trying to watch film. I'm trying to watch game film on myself, number one, to see the things that I did positively and the things I did negatively so I can fix my negatives and turn them into a positive. And then number two, I'll watch us all in a 6-on-6 setting to see, am I getting in somebody's way or did I do something wrong or why was I lazy on this? I can't be lazy on this type of situation. I need to be more aggressive. And I'm just trying to teach myself. And then outside of that, usually by Thursday comes around, I'd say, I'm finally watching one last game film and I'm trying to see everything as a whole from a team standpoint to try to figure out what I can do to potentially help a teammate individually or help us as a whole to try to focus on something that can take us to the next edge. And I've taken a lot of pressure on myself to make sure that if the team fails, it's because of me. I'm one of the captains with Tucker Durkin. And so when we lose, I put it all on my shoulders. When we screw up, I put it all on my shoulders. It's my responsibility. And so I want to make sure if I'm prepared, and everybody else needs prepared. So I hope that people can start following that.
I like it. So let's say that you're watching film, you identify something that you need to improve on for the next week. So what does that look like? When are you working on that? How are you working on that so that you don't do it the next, you know, the upcoming week?
I take notes. I take a lot of notes on myself and I'll take a lot of notes on other things that I see that we need to work on. So right before I go training, let's say I go shooting or let's say I go work with my trainer, I'll read through those notes a little bit and I'll try to do something that either A, if I was a Dodger, I'll try to see how do I become a better Dodger. That Dodge was terrible. It looks like I need to become a better Dodger. I need to work on this. I know exactly what I need to work on. I go out and do it. If it's an off ball, which is a shooting thing, I'll go out back out to the field and I'll try to replicate that type of situation, what I did well, whether my feet were wrong, whether my feet were standing still, my shoulders were over-rotated. I just take these little notes down to try to fix those little habits. And from a bigger standpoint, I try to see everything that I have as a whole. And then when I get to practice on Friday, I just try to talk to coach about what's going on, what can we do to fix, this is what I noticed, or I'll just come up to a couple guys and be like, hey, you know, you're doing a lot of this, but let's try to see the field as well. Let's not try to get that tunnel vision. I understand that that's your type of player, but let's try to layer more skills on. And I say this all the time to our kids now, is if you can be a player in this league and you can be a player that's continually adding a skill and more skill, you can play in this league for as long as you want because you're continuously learning. But if you're going to be stubborn and not want to adapt and build your resume, as I would say, in the game, then how are you going to become an elite player that you want to become? And that's the struggle is most of these guys work a 9-to-5 job and they get home from work, they go work out, and they may say, I don't want to watch film, or they may say, this is going to be tough for me to get a stick in my hands because the weather's bad. So it's hard for them. And so if you can just try to keep plugging in their brains about things that you see to help them out, and you just hope that it helps them out as much. And you hope that they say it back to you as well.
Right. Yeah. That, you know, I mean, it reminds me of the conversation I had with Miles Jones a few weeks ago where you know, the one thing that he kept bringing up in sort of every phase of his career was noticing something that he was weak at and making it a goal to improve at it, whether it's over the season, over the week, over a month, you know, whatever that time period is. So over time, you look back on a 10, 15, 20 year career, you've become a complete player because you're constantly looking at, where am I weak? What can I get better? Once I get better at it, I've just added a new skill, a new tool in my toolkit.
Heck yeah. It's the Michael Jordan effect, I call it. I used to read all the books on Michael Jordan, and Michael Jordan used to read nothing about his glory days, nothing about what he did so well. He wants to know about what people are saying that he can't do. Huh. He wants to know what people are saying that he did wrong, mm-hmm. and he's taking that and making it as his strength.
Right.
Oh, Michael Jordan can't play defense. Oh, yeah, I can't play defense. Watch me be defensive player of the year. Oh, right. Michael Jordan can't pass the ball. Oh, yeah? Michael Jordan can't use his left hand. Oh, yeah? And that's just like the mentality. And that's why Miles Jones is having the success that he's having.
Right.
Because he's grinding and he's understanding it. And he sees it and he builds it because this is something that we want to take into consideration of making a true career out of lacrosse.
Right.
And you got to be able to buy in and invest on yourself.
Right, right. And a lot of people don't realize that it's not natural to want to hear and know the things that you do wrong, right? A lot of people avoid that, and a lot of players do that as well. But if you can get over that sort of natural instinct to try to avoid, hey, what am I bad at? If you can start saying like, hey, what am I bad at? I want to know so that I can get better. If you can sort of change that natural instinct, it's a great skill to have to be able to seek out your weaknesses and turn them into strengths. Yeah, you know, so let's get back to you know, your sort of pregame routine. What is a typical game day like for you? Any superstitions, pregame meal? Do you got a routine? What's it like?
You should know me by now how superstitious I am. I'm crazy. usually Saturday. So I've been rooming with the same roommate for the last 5 years with the Florida Launch.
Yeah, you can't change that
No, you can never change that up. Yeah. And literally, he's always my roommate. Kieran McCarr has been my roommate for literally 5 years. Mm. And every Saturday, we just always come down with a routine. Wherever we wake up 15 minutes before breakfast ends. Wake up and go right downstairs and just to go eat. And then right after that, we go to our walkthrough. And then after walkthrough, we usually try to either take a bus to go somewhere to grab food, or when we get back to the hotel, we immediately go out to grab food mm-hmm. and bring it back to the hotel room. And then we'll eat at the hotel room, like a little meal. I really don't care what I eat as long as what I'm eating is healthy and it's not going to weigh me down.
Right.
So I kind of get a routine of knowing what kind of sandwich meat I can eat, what kind of salads or what kind of foods I should be eating for lunch. And then I take a huge nap. Hmm. We lay in our room. We turn the temperature down as cold as we possibly can. If I can have an igloo, I would love to have an igloo. But I usually take a nap and then I wake up an hour before the game starts. And I've been trying to get on a routine of getting on a bike and just exercising a little bit, mm-hmm. or I'll start stretching and Normatec right before we leave to go to the field. Hmm. And then the moment I get to the field, again, I'm the superstitions. I'm always next to Kieran McArdle. We're all like, mm-hmm. we're just always hand in hand. We have a certain group of us are always trying to be together at the same time in the locker room. I don't really have any superstition. I used to be a superstitious guy of listening to music and zone everybody out and mm-hmm. just get my focus. But I started to be a me guy and I kind of didn't like that. Mm-hmm. So I just let whatever music is playing in the locker room. I just want to be myself. I want to have fun. I want to laugh. I want to joke around and I want to be serious. But the moment that we have 10 minutes hits on the clock before we go out for that walkthrough, mm-hmm. Then I start trying to focus in. I start doing I always have to do my hip activation. They always call me old man, the old man. Now kids call me dad.
Yeah.
Because I was basically 12 when most of these kids were born.
Right.
The younger kids, it's crazy. But they call me dad because I'm doing these hip mobilities. I'm doing these types of stretches just to activate muscles in my body.
Right.
That they were like, what the heck are you doing, Steve? And I was like, I don't know. And then when we come back in through after our walkthrough, that's when everything starts kicking in. Right. Like, I always put my equipment on the same way. It always goes left before right. I always sit down. I retape my stick before every game. I put my mom's initials, my aunt's initials, my son's letter, it's X, and my soon-to-be baby girl that's supposed to be coming in the next 2 weeks. I put an M for Mia on my stick too. So, and then I say a prayer, and then I talk to the Lord, and I talk to my family up above that I've lost, and just thank them for giving me this ability to be here. And then I learned a trick over my time. I spray Stick'Em on my legs so my socks don't fall down and slide down all the time because I sweat so much.
Oh, wow.
And then my last thing is I put eye black on left under the left eye and right eye. And then right when my eye black goes on, that's when it's time to go. That's when I start dialing it in. It starts getting focused.
I love it. Steve, I think that's this is a great place to end. But before I let you go, one question I've asked everybody who's come on the show: what are three things that everybody should do every day to get better at whatever it is they do? It doesn't have to just be lacrosse.
Well, one of my favorite quotes is, "The man in the mirror never lies." So make sure no matter what you do, you're true to yourself and who you are and what you believe in, and don't allow other people to veer you off your own path, beaten path that you want to take. Number two is be passionate about what you do. You cannot just go half-ass into something. If you're going to do something, go do it, and go do it at 110%. Go the extra mile and do the extra stuff in, because it's got to be something ultimately you love or it becomes a work. And listen more than you talk. Be actively listening. So don't be the guy that basically says, I got it. No, understand that when somebody's trying to talk to you, let it soak in. Don't come back with a response. Listen and then figure out what your next approach is going to be, so you don't always have to be the guy and be coachable.
Right. That's awesome. Listen, Steve, this was really great catching up. I'm really happy we got a chance to do this. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Hopefully I can have you back on again. Good luck this weekend, and hopefully we can talk again soon, man.
Thanks, bud. I loved it. I love this stuff. I love catching up with you, Joe.
Absolutely. Same here.
Hopefully you're still strumming away at the guitar and jamming
away. You know it. That's what I was doing before this.
Just like the good old days. I knew you would. You got to tell people that. Like, I used to, if this kid's cut off, it gets cut off. But people that are listening, Joe Uvoli used to be jamming Pearl Jam or Incubus on his guitar down in the room below me. And I used to walk downstairs on the stairs when his door was closed and listen to him play and watch him jam out. And lo and behold, Joe Uvoli got me huge into Incubus and Pearl Jam, which are some of my favorite bands from here on out.
I appreciate that, man. I didn't know that. That's good to know. That's good to know. That makes me happy.
Yeah, dude, of course. I'm not going to go, hey, can I sit in here and listen? No, I'm going to listen to you strum away because you're in the zone, and I'm going to admire it.
I appreciate it, man. Listen, buddy, say hi to the family as well. It was really great having you on, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me on, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Uvoli. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Uvoli. You can find more episodes of the Game Changer Lacrosse Podcast on The Season at theseason.gc.com. If you like the podcast, please take a second to give it a positive review on iTunes. This helps more people find the podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at GC Sports. And if you're a coach, a parent, or you run a travel or club team, check out Game Changer Team Manager in the App Store. It's an essential all-in-one scheduling and communication app for lacrosse coaches and parents. Game Changer Team Manager is free, it's easy to use, and it doesn't serve ads. Learn more at gc.com/team manager. Until next time, keep working and keep getting better.